From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180. Queued up by Edley's Barbecue with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Glad you're with us. We are ready to go alongside Chad Withrow in Mount Juliet, Paul Kuharski in Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. David Reed is the chairman of the board. He's making the show happen for us in Nashville. A nice show planned today. We are ready. Gentlemen, good morning.
Guys, as everyone on social media let you know yesterday, local sports was back in Nashville. It was back full force, and everyone was rejoicing that the Nashville Predators were set to take the ice in an actual meaningful playoff game, unlike that exhibition game that got everyone in a tizzy after that big exhibition win over Dallas, that I said afterward, if they come out and lose in game one to Arizona, guess what? It was just an exhibition game. Arizona looks terrible in their exhibition loss. Preds look good in their exhibition win, and the Preds come out in game one and look terrible in a loss to Arizona, a team as the 11 seed that was also down a couple of their key players. Bad, bad performance by the Preds. Terrible start to the playoffs and a terrible start to people like us and people really like everyone in Nashville that are hoping still for a long playoff run during this time for the Preds. Not good to fall down 0-1, though, in a best-of-five series.
Paul, am I wrong, or is there just a lot of talk about how the fight back from 4-1 – 3-0 and 4-1 to 4-3, like, resurrected the team and everything's fine? And I mean, to see some of Twitter and some of the TV stuff I saw, I felt like they won because they made a comeback. They blew that game. They played terrible from the outset. I don't care if you give me a good second and third period when you're down. You know what happens a lot of times when a team goes down 3-0 and 4-1? They get the better of play the rest of the time while the team that's up 3-0 and 4-1 holds on. That's a terrible game from a team that needs to be better, that is more talented. And I don't want to hear from all these people that are acting like, well, they won the second two periods. You know, we're not chalking up periods here. We're chalking up games. That's a loss. You lose another one, there's one team in history that's come back from down 0-2. To win a best of five series, the 85 Islanders. Let me tell you something about the Predators. They're not the 85 Islanders. Very disappointing performance. And look, talking about bad bounces. There were bad bounces on the one goal. Okay. That was a fluky goal that put them down 1-0. Beyond that, you still got outplayed. Beyond that, the guy that was supposed to come in and transform the team, what was Matt Duchene's biggest contribution in this game? A really stupid penalty that led to 3-0. This was a bad, bad showing.
You know, the Preds had the early power play to start the game. They had a couple of decent looks. They missed those opportunities. And then Arizona has the bounce of all bounces go in. And you're right, Paul. You can't let a bad bounce turn into 3-0. You know, it was 1-0 at that point.
Right.
And it turns into 3-0. And it was a what just happened moment in that first period when they got down. Because they've had those moments frequently with this particular team in this group. Okay, what just happened here with the unlucky bounce now turning into something? I was eager to see how they would come out and fight after they were down 3 goals. I like that. I like that part of it. But yeah, I mean, in a best of five series and in a game where both teams are allowed to come in and crank it up to playoff level hockey, the Preds came out flat. And we have said that with prior coaching with LaViolette, and we say it here with John Hines in game one.
82% all time. Playoff series, if you win the first game, you win the series. So the odds are stacked against them. My other thing, Forsberg turnover for the shorthanded goal. I mean, so you got Duchene making a big mistake on the power play. You got Forsberg making that pass that's picked off for the guy to run down and score a beautiful shorthanded goal. And then you got the bad luck deflection. I mean, that's not good enough. It's not close to good enough. And they're way better. Are they not talent-wise way better?
Well, that one in Hutton, you mentioned sort of the early sort of momentum for the Preds where they had some good chances at the start of the game.
And their power play was excellent yesterday.
And then that bad, the bad bounce, it's 1-0. And then I think it's a close to a 12-minute span where the Preds get outshot 12-1 and falling behind 3-0 after it's 1-0. I mean, that is inexcusable. That's double-digit minutes in a playoff game where you are completely dead and getting dominated, and that was the difference in the game. You know, at 3-0 at that point, they're playing catch up the rest of the time, and it's all but over. Look, they showed fight in coming back, and that's fine, and they had a different intensity level. It's a bad performance, and this is the frustrating thing with me, and I get crushed over this every time that I bring this up, but there's something about hockey that all these people love because the 12 seeds now who have never been in the playoffs before and the 11 seeds have a great shot every single game. Chicago and Montreal are two 12 seeds that everyone was complaining are even in this playoff format coming into it. And they're playing the best seed that's playing in the qualifying round. Both won. Both won in game one. 12 seed over 5 seed. You got the 11 over the 6 with the Coyotes and the Preds. I hate at times how random this sport can be. And there's no separation between the great and the bad in hockey. And it frustrates me like crazy because the Preds are the better team and should be the better team in this series. Yet right now through one game, it doesn't look like it's going to show. And I know people love the random aspect of it, and that's great if you love it. I like to know a little bit more about sports when I go into it. Going into this baseball season, I know the Yankees are really good. And guess what? They're really good to start the season, right? I kind of like that. Maybe I'm alone here, but I like some random surprises here and there. I don't like a sport that it's all random surprises throughout, and that's what hockey is.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's not a huge separation record-wise between Arizona and Nashville. Seeding-wise, yes, but there's like a 2 or 3 win separation on the regular season of what Nashville did and what Arizona did. One happens to be playing, staying in the JW. That's the only difference.
Well, there's a pretty big separation between Chicago and Edmonton and Montreal and who they beat in the first game, I believe. And look, again, this is my personal preference with it, and I know most everyone else loves the fact that it's so random, but I'd like to know a little bit more about the teams going into it and feel like you could actually have some legitimate confidence going into a series. And I just don't think that exists.
They're in a must win. I mean, people throw around must win too much, but you've come, like I said, there's one team in history that's come back from, and I don't know how much there have been best of fives, but you're not coming back from 0-2 in a best of five.
Preds and Coyotes separated by 4 points.
That's a good point. They're not that far apart.
And the Oilers and Blackhawks separated by 9.
Do you touch goalie now?
No.
Me neither.
No, not yet. But, I mean, I think John Hines is telling us something by not touching the goalie yesterday. It's 3-0. I thought about it. As much as we've talked about it during this layoff of 145 days and David Poile saying, you know, we're still evaluating who's going to play in game one and that job is up for grabs. All but saying really that him. To us.
It wasn't really him.
No, I didn't think those were high percentage shots. And I thought Saros played well in the third period. He made some nice saves in the third period.
Needs some help in the other direction. He needs not to be facing a guy come storming in on him shorthand.
Right. And it's unfortunate because all the momentum, we've talked about this locally, with Nashville. I didn't mind the tweets yesterday about, it's so great to see local sports back. I was pumped to watch that game. You know, I DVR'd it on Friday in anticipation for Sunday's game. I couldn't wait to see it and wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything if we had something scheduled yesterday. But, I saw the tweets too, Paul, that you're referencing about
people came away
thinking that the Preds played a lot better than the result showed.
I thought there was so much cheerleading from a local media angle, with the exception, of course, of Joe Rexroad, John Glenn, and Adam Vingan, that it's then hard for me to take the reports of the people who were so cheerleadish at the beginning seriously after the end of the game. So we can get back to that later. David Reed, I'm curious your thoughts on taking that in as somebody who goes to a lot of games as a partial season ticket holder.
to be honestly, I wasn't surprised because that's the team that we'd seen throughout the courses of runs of the season. We know the fight in this team. We've seen them come back from down 3 and 4 goals over the course of the season, but getting yourself down 3 goals in the first period continues to be a problem with this team. And I can't, the breakaway, the shorthanded goal, that's probably one that Sorrow should have stopped. The other one, if you had Pekka in there, that flukish goal probably doesn't go in because Pekka's a foot and a half taller than Soros is. But I don't think the goaltending, Soros is way down the list of problems for that team based on what I saw yesterday. I too many times this season I've seen goals go in and Ryan Ellis is just looking around. He's not trying to put his stick on a man. He's not trying to hold someone's stick. He's not trying to do anything to prevent it. And that goal, that second goal that goes in, I don't know how that happens. Arvidsson gives up, lets Hall just run free there, but there's Ellis and Josi standing there right in front of Soros, making no effort whatsoever to get that to do anything to keep that puck out of the blue ice. And then to me, the one that really the Keller goal, the power play goal, where he's just in the slot by himself, no one around him. Again, Ellis the closest person around, but not in any way, shape, or form to defend that one. That to me is a problem.
Well, and here's the good news. Win tomorrow, and you're fine. Everything resets. But now it's a must win. Yeah. I mean, there's no way around it. In a five-game series, you have to win tomorrow. There's also no real home ice advantage other than last change, right? And I know the Preds were the home team yesterday, but with no crowd, there's no big advantage for either team. So it's not like you're looking down an 0-1 hole in a best-of-five series where you just lost on your home ice in game one. So all is not lost yet, but it was a disappointing performance for the Preds. And to come out like that when the city of Nashville was aflutter with excitement about Nashville sports finally returning, and then to have a first period like that was highly disappointing. But all is not lost yet, and you can join us for our watch party tomorrow to watch the Preds possibly get even with the Coyotes at Scoreboard Bar and Grill off Music Valley Drive. Hope to have a big crowd out there to watch the game.
2-for-1 drinks, oysters, much more, 2408 Music Valley Drive, right next to Opry Mills. Hope you'll swing by, say hello, grab the game with us. We're broadcasting live from 10 until 2 tomorrow. Of course, face-off at 1:30. 615-737-1045, a number. We can react to the weekend, starting with the Predators. We will discuss the Tennessee Titans throughout today's show and much more. Again, John Feinstein at 11:15. But over the next hour, Chad, a load of calls as we recap Game 1 and look ahead to Game 2 for the Predators.
Let's hear from some Preds fans, those who watched the game yesterday. Let's get into it. 615-737-1045, 737-1045. What did you like? What did you not like? We'll discuss. Load up the phone line, 737-1045.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
Because more of them is what you said you wanted. Wait, who am I kidding? They begged for the extra hour. Get more Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski on the 180 at 6 tonight from 6 to 7 p.m. on 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue online, edleysbbq.com. You can download the Edley's app. All of us have it. And with the Edley's app, you log on, you can see the entire menu. You can order curbside pickup. And yes, they deliver through Postmates. edleysbbq.com. Chad, we've just opened up the phone lines. Paul, that means we're ready for some calls on the Preds.
Yeah, let's hear from you. Your thoughts on the 4-3 loss yesterday to Arizona, down 0-1 now, best of five series. Anything you want to talk about from that game, we can discuss. 615-737-1045, 737-1045. Would love to hear from some Preds fans out there your level of discouragement after that performance yesterday, 737-1045.
So a bit of positivity before we get to the negative takes here, which we've already kind of hit on a bit, but I thought the power play was outstanding by the Preds yesterday. And Reed can chime on this too, because we have harped on this with this group in particular. It's the one area they had to get fixed. And I really thought they had something working yesterday. Every chance they had, they generated chances to score. They didn't put up a ton of goals, they generated chances to score. We were not saying that. However, the Predators are better to me in this series playing 5-on-5. I noticed they were much better than Arizona 5-on-5. I think it benefits Nashville more. Arizona scored on a Preds power play, for instance. But when the game was 5-on-5, I thought Nashville was the better team, even though they were really good on the power play. So I think that does that tampers my expectations a bit. But there was just a tone of special teams minutes in that game that I thought the Preds met. And unfortunately, they didn't meet it whenever they were playing the other parts of the ice yesterday.
I think the positive thing that's really coming out of that, though, going into this series, the one thing we heard was about the penalty kill of Arizona. And we saw what the Predators were able to do on the power play. They weren't putting in a ton of goals. They were getting opportunities against one of the best penalty kills in the entire league. That's something to be optimistic about. They have to stay out of the box. We found that out yesterday. 5-on-5 over the course of three total periods of play, I don't think Arizona stands a chance against this team. But if you give them opportunities like you did in that first period in particular, I go back to that goal where Keller's just there in the slot all by himself and just puts it right past Saros. If you give them those opportunities, if you give this team one or two goals, that can be all that they need to play rope-a-dope with you for the rest of the game.
Seems like the trend has been penalties in the early returns of what's going on in the NHL. And so I don't know that that's that surprising that you'd be a little sloppy, grabby, hooky, you know, whatever, but they've got to be really more disciplined. And, and that Duchesne penalty drives me insane.
Same. I was thinking about this yesterday though. They have the layoff of 142 days. They have one exhibition game and then you go right back into full speed, and not just full speed, playoff hockey. We give the NHL a ton of credit for the level that it takes in a notch above the rest of the other leagues for playoff speed, playoff hockey. And I do think it's got to be difficult to do, to sit around in a bubble, to play an exhibition, albeit a fast-paced one, and then jump into playoff-level hockey. Both teams are allowed to do it. I get it. But the mindset, you have to crank it up to 11. And now we see what happens in game two for this group.
Well, they got to do a better job of cranking up to 11, because Arizona had no problem cranking up to 11 in that 12-minute stretch where they outshot the Preds 12-1 and took a 3-0 lead. So that's on the Preds. I'm not buying that excuse. I get that it's different times and that it can't be as easy. But as you said, Hutton, all 24 of the teams participating in this tournament are going to be going through that. And we talked about this when the format was initially laid out. If the Preds win this series, they're going on to face someone that has been sitting the entire time, right? The way it's formatted.
Oh, they're playing a round robin.
They're what playing right. The top four seeds are playing for seeding right now. They're not sitting around.
But not playoff hockey is my point.
Not
right?
as much.
Extent. Hutton's talking about going from exhibition to going into playoff hockey. I'm saying they're going from a playoff series into games with someone who's been not playing playoff hockey. So is that going to affect the team in the next round? But right now, these teams playing in the actual qualifier rounds, like the Preds and the Coyotes, they all have the same advantage or disadvantage going into this series. And maybe, you know, maybe it took that. Look, I don't buy this. Hey, you know, now they woke up going down 1-0, and now they realize what it takes. But maybe there is something to that, and now they know the speed that they need to be at the entire time. That's the speed they were in that third period and the way they played with that urgency in the game, and now that can hopefully carry over if you're the Preds into game two.
Yeah, well, not the like physical speed so much as the urgency.
Well, so they spent the money on Johansson and Duchesne. They've made a coaching change. You can't, by the way, you can't blame Pekka anymore. He's on the bench. This is David Poile's team and Poile's leadership group. Let's see these moves, tweaks, overhauls, and scheme pay off, because surely this is not a mail-it-in situation. You don't fly across half of the globe to return to practice and quarantine and travel and isolation for this result. you know, where you bow down to Arizona of all teams. And when I say that, this is under the presumption that they don't show up in game two and win. Tomorrow night should be one of the best all-out efforts we've ever seen from this group. And I say tomorrow night, tomorrow afternoon. It should be one of the best efforts we've ever seen from this group. If it's not, they have a huge problem on their hands with how they've built this team.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to mail it in based on the way they came back in this game yesterday. And I don't want to put too much into that because they still lost the game. But the pushback is what you keep hearing about. The pushback yesterday shows me it's not a team that's going to mail it in. So from that perspective, I feel good about tomorrow and the effort that you're going to see from the Preds in that game, because it's do or die now in this game. And I'm hoping to see some carryover in urgency from the third period into the first period of the game tomorrow.
I also think anybody that's down 3-0 is going to show you some pushback. You know what I mean? I mean, I think it's the nature of the game that if you're up 3-0, it's more likely that the team that's down fights back some than that the team that's up 3-0 ends up 6-0 in playoff hockey. And so I'm not saying I discredit the Preds coming back, but that's going to be the shape, I think, of most playoff games. Now, you're not going to get all the way to 4-3. Well, I give them respect that they got all the way back to 4-3. But, you know, don't get yourself in that situation. Yeah, I'm not going to throw a parade for the pushback.
No. They shouldn't throw a parade just by advancing in the qualifying round either. I mean, they based on this talent and the group that they've built, we were talking just a few seasons ago about the window of opportunity being open. So let's see them cash in.
Yeah.
Great opportunity for all of these teams.
Not throwing a parade if they win the qualifying round, Hutton, but I am throwing a wake if they lose this qualifying round.
Yeah, that's a good way to spin it.
It's devastating. I mean, let's not tiptoe around it. If they lose to Arizona in this series, 6-11, that's devastating for this team. And that window that we've been talking about for so long now, it's not good. And there's no excuse, because everything that's happened and the bubble and the circumstances of that, every Arizona is going through the same exact thing right now. And they don't have a GM who just walked out on them. They don't have their leading goal scorer on the team right now who got hurt in the exhibition game also. I mean, give me a break. But I do expect to see great effort tomorrow from the Preds. And if they can continue whatever momentum they gathered in the third period yesterday and can carry that over into game two, then it's going to be a lot better things happening for the Preds tomorrow afternoon.
Hair Metal Henry tweets us, this year's Preds team is like a bad golf swing. You could take time off from golf for a month, come back and hit the first few good, but eventually the bad comes back and you play terrible. He's not anticipating good things.
615-737-1045, a number we anticipate a big day tomorrow, because we will be live at Scoreboard Bar and Grill, live starting at 10 a.m. and leading you up to face-off between the Preds and the Coyotes. We're going to be live, sticking around for a duration of the game, a good portion of the game at the very least, and you can come hang out with us. We've got some RSVPs already rolling in, Chad, but by RSVPing, you're securing a T-shirt, a Midday 180 Preds T-shirt.
That's right, yeah, and we've posted a picture of the T-shirt that you're going to get, that Preds Midday 180 theme shirt. Let us know if you're going to be there, and we can hold those shirts back for you. We've heard from a few people that are already going to know they're going to be there tomorrow afternoon. So, look, if you're working from home, if you're off work tomorrow, if you can make it, game starts at 1:30. We'll be there from 10 a.m. to 2. They're going to have a $20 seafood boil available for you. Oysters are available, 2-for-1 drinks for the entirety of the day, also at Scoreboard Bar and Grill. Come join us for the Preds Watch Party tomorrow afternoon. Hope to see a big crowd. And guys, most importantly, it's our first time doing a show not in our homes since March. This is our first time officially out of our homes to go do a live broadcast, and it's around a Preds playoff game. So hope to see a big crowd out there. Putting the call out to all Midday 180 season ticket holders, especially. We've heard from the likes of Hair Metal Henry and Gator Mike. We've heard from a few others.
Josh.
Maybe Shepard. Josh. We need all of our season ticket holders to unite and come join us at Scoreboard Bar and Grill tomorrow. More than anything, because we just want to see you and hang out with you. And this is our first chance in a long time we've had to actually do that. And we're out in a big space outside under a patio. So plenty of room to spread out and be safe and be socially distanced if needed. So come join us. Looking forward to a great time tomorrow with that Preds watch party.
On Twitter, Beep, Midday Beep, I've not heard this Twitter handle before, said, why the hell would the Preds fans want to hear what Grabner has to say during the intermission? Do better intermission interviews. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. This is kind of a joint telecast where Preds and the Coyotes are given what they're given. So the Coyotes probably got a Preds interview they weren't real excited about between periods at one point as well.
There are no local broadcast from Edmonton. Sportsnet sends the feed of like 32 cameras roughly to Nashville. And at intermission, they have someone from Sportsnet holding a boom mic, asking questions to a player going through intermission. That's you're right. You just kind of get what
half
you get.
The time
you get a storyline of the period that you're recapping. That's what you get.
Which is just not unreasonable.
Yeah, they're making the most of it. And then I thought the broadcast locally, they did a really nice job of calling the game from Bridgestone Arena.
Which can't be easy.
No, it can't. Intermission reports from Bridgestone Arena. I mean, all things considered, I think there was one moment where Willie couldn't figure out what the whistle was for. And that's going to happen.
Yeah, and I've seen that in baseball too, where it's if something happens away from the action or the puck goes into an unusual place or the baseball goes into an unusual place, you just don't have eyes. You don't have eyes on it.
Yeah.
If the camera doesn't have eyes on it, you don't have eyes on it, and then you're stuck. And that you're beholden to the cameras.
Do you guys like the utilization of ringside reporters, sideline reporters in baseball and hockey back at their home stadiums or ballparks while the team's away?
Well, what else would you have them do? I mean, I think
I'm all for people being employed, right? And having somewhere to go work. So I'm not going to be critical of that, but it's a little bit weird that we're talking about doing remote broadcasts with just a play-by-play and color person and eliminating the sideline reporter position altogether, especially on the road. Yet we have someone standing in an empty arena or an empty ballpark doing sideline and rinkside reports during broadcast.
I will say, like, Ken Rosenthal's been in the ballpark once or twice that I've seen on a national broadcast, and I thought lent something to those broadcasts in the build as the one guy in the building, kind of giving you the feeling of the empty place. I get what you're saying, Chad. I think that person has done some pre-reporting, so has some stories to connect on. Then it's just a choice of the background. I do think, forgive me, I don't know his name, the Preds online person who did a report on the Rogers Center thing. I mean,
Brooks
Bratton. The most amateur. Yeah, it was a pitiful waste of time. He went down and his voiceover was like, and here's a basketball hoop. And here's some cornhole boards, and here's some chairs and tables. While he was talking over video of showing you the basketball hoop and the cornhole boards and the tables and chairs. I mean,
NHL 20. That's the I best saw the video can, game setup also yeah, that he showed.
If that's the best you can give me, then he shouldn't be there, or you should be coaching him on giving you something better than that. But
that's all he has.
That was the best. I mean, they should have flashed up on the screen like, go to the bathroom now.
Well, he doesn't have a camera crew there, so I'm assuming he's just taking that with a handheld like or a cell phone video.
You give some 20-year-old a camera and access to that thing, and that's what he brings back. You didn't do a very good job picking the guy.
I don't think he's 20.
Well, I could give you a 20-year-old who's cheaper than that with a handheld to walk around and come back with something better than that. Sorry, nothing personal.
Paul, let's see your report. Let's see you go out with a cell phone camera and report on something in the middle of a pandemic at a sporting event where there's no fans.
I would love
how it looks. See how it looks.
I guarantee you I come back with something better than that.
I guarantee you do not.
At the combine, I used to do stuff like that.
The man who says
Kyle. It was on ESPN.
Paul, tomorrow, do your report from Scoreboard Bar and Grill, as it should be done.
Yeah, give us a rundown of the seafood boil going on, the 2-for-1 drinks, Like, walk us through the facility and do it and show us what they should be doing.
Well, here's a secret.
I'm serious. I want to see that.
Well, I'll give you some tips right now. When you're taking pictures of the basketball hoop and the cornhole and the chairs, do it when somebody's there. I don't want to see a ghost town of it. I want to see guys doing it.
He's probably not allowed when there are other people there. He's probably not allowed there with the players.
Okay, well, then tell me a little bit about that. That would be interesting to me. Yeah. Tell me something about
it. It's currently 7:30 in the morning. I'm down
this
here
This is the time I'm allowed to be
will
here.
Arrive.
Right. Something. Do you think that was an interesting report, or are we just diving on to support the guy?
Paul, you say that's a sign that says go to the bathroom. The sign for me is when the clock expires at the end of the period. Then I, you know, change the channel.
Well, this was on during
the... All right, time to go.
All right, time to refill my drink.
No, I didn't see this report.
I saw the report.
How'd you like
it? I saw the report.
Was it as good as I'm telling you?
Here's what disappointed me about the report. I feel like I want to say the report over and over. It's like the parade. On to the report. The report was twofold. First off, if you read the story from The Athletic with the description of the bubble in Edmonton and the rundown of everything, it was amazing. And if you listen to our interview with David Poyle, you got a lot more detail on how they decided the floors of the hotel, who got in the hotel, the meeting room size, the eating room sizes, everything else. I thought David Poyle was terrific explaining the setup in the bubble. So when I read that and then I hear from David Poyle, I've got this in my mind of this immaculate place and setup for the NHL that they've created, the bubble. And then I see that report and I think,
this looked like my driveway.
This looks like they slapped down a ping pong table and two cornhole boards and a small TV with a PlayStation.
Don't
or
forget
an Xbox
the tables and
there.
Chairs.
And that's the lounge. Like, well, here's the lounge, and as you can see, it's good for lounging. And it's just a chair that kicks back, and I'm thinking, boy, this is not nearly as cool as I thought. I want like a laser show or something going on based on reading The Athletic story.
Two quick things. Chris Mason was scheduled to be with us today at 10:15. He'll join us tomorrow. We don't do back-to-back interviews, and it's no fault of the Wake-Up Zone, but the Wake-Up Zone had him on at 9:15. We're not going to have the same repeat guest on within an hour. So Chris was very cool about it. He'll join us tomorrow as we preview game two. And Mike Keith normally joins us in this segment each and every Monday, or has since we've been broadcasting from home. He will join us tomorrow. I had a meeting going on this morning. So he'll also be on the show tomorrow at 10:15. 615-737-1045, our number. There's a former Titan who has been rumored and linked to a couple of Titans rivals. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone.
You've always wanted to put Paul Kuharsky in your pocket and take him everywhere with you. Now you can download the 104.5 The Zone app and listen to The Zone from anywhere.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Delanie Walker reportedly getting looks from a couple of teams that the Titans just saw in the postseason. First, the New England Patriots and the Baltimore Ravens.
Patriots had a tight end opt out. So as soon as he opted out, everybody was connecting Delanie Walker to the Patriots.
He's 35 and coming off back-to-back years of injuries, but he had four straight seasons where he had over 800 yards receiving. That was during some really down times for some Titans offenses where he was the only guy on the field.
Ravens Ravens traded Hurst, right? Which was kind of odd. So it's interesting. Peter King today featured the Ravens and talked about them being more wide receiver centric in his expectations. So, I mean, Delanie Walker, I hope he resurfaces if he wants to play. I imagine he wants to play. I think a lot of Titans fans, you know, probably expect more from him in if he lands somewhere than what he will provide at this stage of his career. But I'd hope that he could still be, you know, a piece for one of those teams, and it'd be cool to cross paths with one of them with him on the roster.
They don't have the group of tight ends that I thought they did as Baltimore.
Ravens.
Nick Boyle, Mark Andrews, and Charles Scarf are on my depth chart for them.
Yeah, that's Charles by the Hearst thing. Charles Scarf. Scarf. Yeah, he's known for his family comes from a long
Charles
line.
Charles Scarf sounds like something that you made up in an improv comedy show for your name. You know,
it's like SNL whenever they were doing the dry yeah. run and they asked for a name
that's
for a sports
any
caster,
sketch show.
And the guy from Nashville yelled out Hope Hines, and so they went with Hope Hines. Charles Scarf is that guy for NFL players.
This is tax attorney Charles Scarf in this sketch on SNL or at Second City Improv. What's any name we can go with? Oh, this guy's wearing a scarf. Charles Scarf, ladies and gentlemen, is here.
That's why the, right Hearst, the Hearst trade was odd. More power to Delaney. I hope he lands somewhere. Hope he gets to do what he wants to do and finish the way he wants to finish. Unlikely to be the same guy that we're envisioning when all of us right now say the name Delaney Walker and the tape rolls in our head.
He has a career 2 catches in the preseason for 27 yards, and he is a one-year player out of Delaware.
He has a very trendy haircut and a very trendy beard. Like yeah. He looks like he's got 2 F's, by the way, scarf with 2 F's.
It's kind of like
I'm
Flacco
looking at him right now.
Same and I think he's got a big
collection. He does look like Flacco. You're right. These blue hens really stick together. They go to the same barber, apparently, also.
And he's got a big collection of scarves. Scarves, excuse me. And so it would be really devastating if he wound up in, like, with the Dolphins or the Cardinals or the Rams.
Or maybe it's not scarf, Chad. Maybe it's, like, some weird pronunciation. What would it be?
Scarif.
There you
like,
go.
There's an I in there that yeah. we that's not
Charles
actually.
Charles Scarif.
Yes, that's actually Charles Sarif, not Scarf. Thank you.
He starts making calls around Nashville with Charles Estel.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how frustrating it'd be to have a name like Scarf, but it was actually pronounced Sarif or something like that? And every time someone, Charles Scarf, the first day of school, calling it's, I'm sorry, it's Sarif, but yes.
Or like Butt, and it's actually Butte or something.
Yes.
Chad Butt, Jonathan Butt, please report. Sweet
bass.
Butte. It's Butte, actually.
Butte, thank you.
put the little symbol over the E. It's Butte. I am a Butte. A real Butte, as I've been called.
With an umlaut.
Yes.
That's it. Yes, thank you.
So, he's going to get some options here, it sounds like. He's the one name we haven't heard. And Logan Ryan is still available. But Delaney... Whenever he left, he had that statement that made it sound like he wanted to continue to play at 35.
Once again, though, seems like the perfect Patriot, right? Like the,
yeah.
him at this point in his career, it feels like the Patriots will be the team that gets something out of him at this late stage in his career.
Well,
just
see,
the way
me,
he is also.
To me, he's the kind of guy that goes to the Patriots and either becomes a contributor or retires in 10 days.
Yeah. Gets there and decides he's not.
When they make it clear to him that they're going to release him and he has to decide, like, do I want to go back into the player pool or is the Patriots' message to me the message that I'm going to get anywhere else?
So, guys, I know at some point we're going to get into the Pac-12 story from yesterday and have a deep discussion on that. I've seen a lot of players opting out for health concerns. This is the first one I've seen, though. This story just coming down from Mike Barber. With the Richmond Times Free Press, who covers Virginia Tech. This is the first one I've seen where a player is opting out because the school isn't doing a good enough job preventing the spread of COVID-19. Caleb Farley, player for Virginia Tech, says in a statement that the Hokies' lax COVID safety measures led to his decision to opt out of football this season. Virginia Tech is declining to comment. In a quote, he says, "One day I looked around and we were like 100 people deep in our indoor facility, no masks with anyone there." Hmm. And he has decided to opt out for that reason. He is a cornerback with Virginia Tech.
Yeah, he wrote this, Chad, in Peter King's column. Peter King gave him a section of his column today. He also said, like, guys will take off for the beach for the weekend, come back, nobody will say anything, 100 deep in the room, whatever. He said, that just don't feel like, and he lost his mom to cancer. He was at her bedside and his feeling was like, now I'm down to my dad. And if I do something, you know, that's my fault or not my fault that gets my dad sick, I could never forgive myself for it. It's a very nicely written section of Peter King's column today. that made you feel really sympathetic for the kid and his plight, and made you wonder how many other kids, you know, might hear that, and it might wake them up to it. It made you wonder about the other 99 kids too, who are, you know, part of that 100 deep, no masks in the, what did he say? The weight room,
indoor facility,
indoor facility.
Yeah. In their indoor facility. And I'm sure that this is going to prompt Virginia Tech to change their safety measures and issue some sort of statement moving forward. I would guess. I doubt they stay silent on this. They're not commenting right now. I doubt they stay silent
because they're busy reacting. You would hope, you would think.
Paul, did you light your candle at the end of the first period yesterday for the Predators? Blow out a candle to make a wish as the team wanted you to do?
I thought that was quite hokey.
I didn't even know this was a thing.
Oh, yeah, the Preds put out a thing to light a candle and blow it out and make a wish. We won't tell you what it should be, and you don't tell us, but we all know.
Spirit of Sports Fest. Yeah, they tweeted this out at the end of the first period?
Yeah. So you didn't do it either.
Interesting.
I'm guessing you didn't do it either.
No.
That's why they scored
really quickly, though, to begin the second period. I'm like, or was it third period? They got the goal early. I'm like, oh, it worked.
Candles work.
I'm having a very difficult time with Preds Twitter. I'm having a very frustrating time reading the Preds writers and people that I follow on Twitter during a game. So it's best that I just stay away from it.
Well, I can't.
It'll eventually lead to me once again retweeting some Preds writer that I see making fun of their stance on being overly hype about something happening or overly critical. There's not a lot of right down the middle analysis that I'm getting on the Preds. It's either all doom and gloom or all joy and let's hold hands.
Oh, I don't know.
This team's winning the Stanley Cup.
I mean, look, there are three guys who are covering the team legitimately. Two of them in The Athletic. One of them's now at this Broadway sports media. In John Glennon. Christopher Martel, is he connected to our station anymore? I don't know. He's at Broadway Sports.
He's with Broadway, yeah.
I've argued with him about this time and time again because he's this guy that thinks he's got this incredible ability to put on a cloak of a sports writer for the duration of the game and then to put on his Predators jersey to go to the mall. He wrote, pretty garbage effort so far through 40 minutes for a Preds team that absolutely could, all caps, control this game as they wish, but aren't. So according to him, the Predators could have controlled it. They just, for some reason, decided not to. I mean, what kind of tweet is that? They could control the game, but they have.
I think he's wording my stance. My stance has been, this is the Preds are by far the more talented team.
Yeah. I see what you're saying, Paul. The wording of it is weird, cool. Like they decided not to control the game. But I think the point is what Hutton said. They're the better team. They should be in control of the game, but they're not.
And we want a long run because in this time frame, we want local sports. And we get to see how they respond tomorrow. Tomorrow, 1:30.
I prefer they win, but I'm not breathlessly.
Oh, we're not bringing the pom poms
back, and there were so many pom poms out. I mean, Emily Proud, who I think is one of the best TV people in the city, did a tweet. You know, I know I'm supposed to be detached here, but you know, I can't be. Steve Lehman, you know, who's good, you know, said I'm emotional here with sports return. Yeah, put all that aside, guys, and do what you're supposed to do. I don't want to hear about your emotional stuff. I don't want to hear about you putting things aside. Sports are back. Go do what we expect you to do.
Midday 180, beat up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone.
Y'all be shaking the hell out of that pom-pom.